Yes, and here we are, here we stand, back again. That's Bella Ciao, appropriate song for today. Comes out of Italy, the resistance movement there, going all the way back to Garibaldi in the 19th century, who deposed the Vatican. And well, you know, folks, the same thing is happening today. The first day of autumn, September 23rd, here we stand. Follow our work, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. And on this first day of autumn, we are seeing the leaves of the old tree of the Vatican falling as we speak, collapsing from the inside out. Some very important news. We're going to be talking about this today with my co-host Katie Stokwa from the Algonquin Nation. Dissident Catholic clergy break from Church of Rome with a global declaration as new exposures of the Ninth Circle cult emerge. You can read about this at itccs.org. A very important notice from nearly 200 clergy in 9 countries publicly broke from the Vatican on Friday. And we're going to get into that story. Also on the air today will be 4 brothers and sisters from Ireland leading the Take Back the City movement there, the homeless in their thousands occupying empty buildings and taking on the Catholic Church as one of the biggest slum landlords in Ireland. We're going to be hearing them later in the show. And before we start any of that, let me just welcome my co-host Katie Stokoe. Hello, Katie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
Good.
How about you?
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
Great news. Yes.
Listen, Kevin, I have a message that I just want to read to you really quickly over the air that was sent to me, mm-hmm. if I could right now.
Yes.
Okay, and it's on behalf of the Algonquin Nation, and the message is we want you to know that you were sent by our Creator God of light and truth to expose church and state crimes. We want to thank you and ITCCS for all your dedication, sacrifices, for the work you are doing and have done over the years. In particular, Kevin, the work that you've been doing over the past 25 years. We want you to know that we are thinking of you, we hold you in our prayers, and we love you.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you to all your people. I'm doing the purpose I was given. And that's the best a human being, a man or woman, can do. And it means a lot, you know, because I want to talk about this story. I know there was this notice came out on Friday originally. The ITCCS office had received it. But I wonder if you could read that kind of preamble that the ITCCS attached to it.
Sure. So this is the breaking ITCCS news communique, September 23rd. 2018. Important note from the ITCCS Directorate. The following declaration was received by our office on Friday from a network of disaffected clergy within the Church of Rome. It was accompanied by a second confidential message containing a massive file of documents and evidence from a previously unknown Vatican archive. Its contents are shocking and are being analyzed by the ITCCS and its technical staff. They indicate extensive child sacrificial networks operating within the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops, CCCB, and warn of an upcoming coven of the Ninth Circle cult at the CCCB conference at the NAV Center in Cornwall, Ontario, between September 24th to 28th, 2018. A more complete report on this material will be forthcoming and will be reported on Here We Stand. That's on Sunday, September 23rd, 30th.
Right. And also, if you go to itccs.org, thanks, Katie, and
yes.
If you go to the website, you'll also notice under it an attached cease and desist order, which the common law court issued in the wake of this evidence that was given to the ITCCS. It's a cease and desist order directed at all 70 or more Catholic bishops in Canada, basically saying they have to stand down from their office. They're part of a not only trafficking children, but the organized murder of children. And they're subject to arrest unless they stand back from their oath of allegiance to the Pope and their involvement in the Catholic Church as a convicted transnational criminal body. So these are very powerful things. But let's talk about the actual not-in-our-name statement. Again, people can go to the ITCCS.org site and read it for themselves, but just in summary, it's called a legal, not in our name, a legal and moral declaration and pledge of non-cooperation issued by concerned Roman Catholic clergy. It says there are a group of clergy within the church who in good conscience cannot associate any longer with the criminal anti-Christian actions of the Vatican and the papacy. They talk about the growing exposure in the world media of a massive network of child trafficking, rape, torture, and murder, and the direct implication of the Pope and senior officials in that network. They then go on to say that under the law, since they can be convicted, every Catholic is complicit in these crimes unless they step back from this policy of crimen solicitanus, which requires that child rape be covered up by every Catholic in the world, or they're excommunicated. Now, as a result, they pledge themselves to do five things, and this is astounding. These are Catholic clergy talking. First of all, they're going to ignore church policy and report and uncover any abuse of children going on in the churches and tell the police about it. Now, that runs directly counter to the criminal policy. They're directly challenging Rome by doing that. Secondly, they're going to name the names of the people doing it, even if it's their bishop, even if it's the cardinal. And also, get this, they're going to not give communion anymore, or any of the sacraments to the church, to anyone involved in these crimes, and they're going to refuse to accept money from them in the collection plate. Finally, if they're ordered by their superiors to stop doing that, and if they face discipline or punishment, they will separate themselves and their congregations from the church and continue to operate as separate congregations under what they say is the authority of Christ alone. And finally, they're going to reach out to others in the church and get them to take this pledge. Now, this is, Katie, you know, this is like what happened 500 years ago with Martin Luther. Then it was about church corruption and buying indulgences and that. Now it's about human survival. It's about the lives of our children. This is an amazing, like another Wittenberg proclamation, and we've got to get this all over the world. It starts small with a couple of hundred of them. Potentially, this is going to bring down the whole church. What are your thoughts on any of that?
This is huge, and when I first read the communique that came out, the first thing I thought of was, in actual fact, Martin Luther. And he, you know, the work that he did in trying to expose the adversary within. It wasn't so much that he was trying to create a schism, per se, but he was trying to reform the church within. The adversary, I'll call the Satanists, the Pharisees or the Canaanites of Jesus' day, they were called Zionists today. They just changed their name throughout history. And so, you know, I thought of that, and this is right. Just, it's so huge.
Yes, and, you know, there's an urgency to this, too, because as you mentioned in reading that introduction to the communique, tomorrow all the Canadian Catholic bishops are meeting in Cornwall, Ontario. And we know from these priests have come forward, some of whom are in Canada and are insiders, there will be a coven of the Ninth Circle, probably tomorrow night, because these things tend to happen on the 23rd or 24th day of the month, these sacrificial rituals. Children will die at that NAV center. Now, let's talk a little bit about Cornwall, because it's been in the news a lot. It was the place where a huge child trafficking network was broken up because of the courage of one cop, Perry Dunlop, who was then driven out of the force. He found that children were being trafficked across the border. Every Catholic priest in the area was going to Cornwall to get children. The papal nuncio intervened to shut down the investigation. And Cornwall is a hotspot for this child trafficking. Now, that's where they're meeting tomorrow. Yeah. And they're meeting in a place called the NAV Center, which, get this, it stands for navigation. It's a private company called NAV Canada, which runs all the airline navigational systems. But they're tied to this thing called Iridium Communications. Guess who they're tied to? The CIA and the U.S. Air Force. The HARP technology, they run global satellite, actually the largest global satellite network on the planet is run by this Iridium Communications. That's where they're meeting, at these headquarters, this lavish resort in Cornwall, Ontario, as well as all the Catholic bishops are meeting. So it's not accidental. And we've asked all of our people in Eastern Ontario to mobilize, to get out there. We know there's Commonwealth sheriffs heading there to try to make these arrests and shut down that thing. We're going to have more on that next Sunday. But people in the Cornwall, Ontario area need to know this. The crime is happening right in their backyard tomorrow.
And I'd like to add, Kevin, that this is the same place where Russell Williams operated out of. And there is a native reserve, a huge native reserve, right on the Canadian-U.S. border where native children are abducted, trafficked, and I'm sure are used for these kinds of vile ritual sacrifices.
Now tell the folks a bit who might not know who Russell Williams was or is.
Well, he was a colonel with the Navy, and he was the Queen Elizabeth's private pilot. He was found, I cannot remember the year, but he was found guilty and presently in jail for abducting, raping, and murdering women. I believe I know some of the women were on the base working, and he would film them, put their, and collect underwear and bras and things like that, and then put them on and film himself.
Right.
It's pretty sick.
I think it's Canadian Forces Base Trenton or one place near Cornwall.
That's it, Trenton.
That's right, and see, this is a real hot spot. It's near Ottawa. It's, as Brenda Everill from Picton, which is just down the road, described, it's kind of the center of the old Canadian Anglo-Catholic establishment. And so, yeah, this is, if you're looking for the heart of the beast in Canada, it's definitely there in Cornwall. And so, as we mentioned, there is this cease and desist order. It's been sent out today, registered mail, email, hand-delivered to over 70 bishops across the country they're there now in Cornwall. And the place is going to be, there are sheriffs who are going in there. So we'll see what happens with that. But that's the flag, background for this story that, this crime is right in our own backyard, folks, and this will be ongoing coverage. Now, in about 5 minutes, the Irish folks are going to come on. There'll be a little bit of a different focus. They're going to be talking about this Take Back the City movement, but they are all seasoned veterans in the campaign in Ireland to expose these crimes. It was interesting, Kate, that when the Pope Francis came there, and of course he's implicated in these crimes from Argentina way back, he's an active member of the Ninth Circle.
Mm-hmm.
When Bergoglio, this Pope Francis, went to Ireland a few weeks ago, only 5% of the people who came to the last people visit turned out. There was a very small crowd and 15,000 protesters against him. A lot of those protesters were objecting to his involvement in the cover-up of the Chum mass grave of babies.
Mm-hmm.
In Chum, Ireland, the Bon Secours sisters, they found that on the grounds of that orphanage, they found over 800 baby skeletons chopped up in a ritual manner. And the Catholic Church and the Irish government moved in quickly to shut it down, do a Canadian-style TRC cover-up.
Yeah.
But the truth is people were angry. They're in the streets saying, we don't want these killers in our country anymore. So these are some of the folks who did it, and I just got a message here from John. They'll be on the air in less than 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But any final thoughts about this kind of pointing the way forward?
Well, I saw photos of ITCCS boots on the ground in real time, and the numbers is astounding in compared to, 50 years ago even. The drop in the numbers is just astounding, and and that's great. People are waking up all over the world. The gig is up.
Yeah, and especially in the so-called loyal Catholic countries. In Chile, Bergoglio had to go there because 28 Catholic churches had been burned to the ground by the Mapuche Indians, who were tired of their land being stolen and their children taken by the priests, who would bugger them in the local Catholic church. They took direct action. The Irish are taking that action. So if they can do it, everyone, especially in Canada, we have to take that same action. And a lot of the work we do is to organize and train people to do that. You can get our common law training manual at Amazon.com. Just put in the name Kevin Annett. Write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com. And, it's up to each one of you listening to do that. We are the catalyst. We are not the organizers. You're your own organizer in your community. You know your situation. Your experience is your best teacher. And so it's up to all of you listening to carry this ball and run with it. I'm sure. Let me know, Dawn, when we... John just sent me a message saying they're ready any minute, so they should be with us. Also, to remind folks, murderbydecree.com gives you background to the crimes of genocide and how it was documented over 25 years. The Irish folks are with us. Hello, John.
Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Hello.
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 Mary Jean and Benson and everybody else, it's great to have you here again, folks. Now, we were giving a little bit of a background. The big movement happening in Ireland, tell us the latest about the Take Back the City movement and really especially how it relates to the whole issue of slum landlordism and the Catholic Church and all of these historic criminals.
Okay, basically, back in May, there was an eviction in Summerhill here. The slum landlord had 150 students living within five houses, paying 300 and odd euro a month for a bed. He had them in the attic, in the basement. He basically had them everywhere. When we went in and took over the property, they were obviously evicted. So then the properties became vacant. So when Take Back the City went in and took over the property, there was basically in the kitchen, there were shelves for bed one, bed two, bed three. So it wasn't even rooms these people were paying for. They were paying for beds.
Wow.
At 320 quid a month each.
Now, Jean, is that pretty common in Dublin? Is that the kind of thing you see a lot, or was this kind of a particularly notorious example?
With the homeless situation at the moment now, it is pretty common at the minute, yeah. People are making money off the homeless in many different ways, between bed and breakfast, hotels. Now, the charities are getting involved, the likes of your Salvation Army and all now, because they built hubs. So now they have homeless hubs here now in Ireland, which is something that we never had before. It's just that the homeless situation is just going beyond a joke now at this stage. There's over 10,000 people that's actually homeless. There's over 4,000 children homeless at the moment.
I remember you told me, Jean, at one point that the people took direct action in the case you're talking about and they stopped eviction. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that happened?
Well, basically, we got a call out to say that there was an eviction. The landlord was actually being up in court and it was a fire and safety hazard, obviously, because he had so many people living in one property. So we got a call out to say that this landlord was coming in and evicting these people illegally. They had paid up their rent a month in advance. So when we went up, obviously a lot of these people that were in the property had already left. So the fire service, the fire chief came out and he checked the property over, went over to the landlord and basically told him that he had to let them stay. Enough people had left the property that it was actually safe once they weren't living in the attic and they weren't down in the basement, because there obviously was no fire escapes.
Yep.
So basically that night there was a load of us outside the house. I went into the property to find out the police were after turning up. So I went in to find out what the police were saying to these people. These people, they didn't have very good English, so they needed people to kind of fight their battle for them. Mm. When I came out then, I turned around to Mary and I said, it's okay, it's a civil matter, there's nothing they can do. There's enough people after leaving, they're going to be left there. And one of this landlord's thugs turned around to me and says, what the hell are you talking about? Who the hell are you? Are you listening to somebody else? Blah, blah, blah. If you don't shut your mouth, I'm going to throw you down over that basement. So then all hell kind of broke loose and people were giving out to your man because all he was a thug.
Who told you that? Who threatened you, Jean? Was it a cop?
No, it was one of the landlord's lackeys that he'd got in to intimidate people to get them out of the house.
But you stopped that, right? Tell us how you stopped it.
Well, basically, there was nothing that they could do. Legally, the people were allowed to stay there because the fire chief said that it was not a fire hazard anymore. The landlord had to pay each and every one of them to move out of the house. He had to pay to put them up into other accommodation because they had already paid their rent.
Well, let me ask you or any others, how is this mushroomed? Like, we've been hearing stories and seeing, you know, lots of people in the streets of Dublin. Tell us about this Take Back the City movement.
How are you doing, Kevin? Vincent here.
Good. Hi, Vinny.
So basically, Take Back the City, which just basically it's a lot of people just coming together, activists, a lot of young activists as well coming together and basically fighting for their future. They're all coming together and they occupied certain buildings around the city in order to highlight the homeless issue that's going on. But not just that, a lot of these void properties are all around speculating. A lot of these landlords are speculators, and the vulture funds are speculators, leaving these empty properties all around the city. So Take Back the City came together to actually highlight these issues, that a lot of these properties have been left for years on end, and while the homeless crisis is just getting worse and worse and worse, you know. There's plenty of properties in our country now at the moment. I think the figure that I heard the other day was near up to 300,000, which... The homeless crisis, it's a big problem, but there's so many different issues when it comes to homelessness in Ireland. There's people that can't even declare themselves homeless because they're actually working, and it might look bad on their job, or there's the homeless people on the street, or there's people that can't afford to stay in their properties. They have no choice but to end up on the street or use these homeless accommodations. But people are taking advantage of this, and it's now become a very profitable business for landlords and... even though there's regulations out there to stop this, it's not being enforced, and the problem just seems to be getting worse and worse.
Now I want to also ask, you know, I'm doing just a little bit of research. I found thousands of properties owned by the Catholic Church, and, you know, of course, they don't pay taxes. They got an easy break, billionaire's break. So how much of a slum landlord are they in Dublin or around the country?
Well... Regarding the church, John will actually tell you more about that there now.
Well, we've done a little bit of research as well, Kevin, and the Vatican has a big stranglehold here in Ireland, we've discovered. They own something like 10,800 properties, and their estimated wealth is something like 4 billion euro here in Ireland. Yeah, and we tracked down some major reports to reveal that they literally control all aspects of society here. They control hospitals, they control schools. You know, they literally control everything. They're examining the state are arguing with all this wealth that they have. Can they get it transferred into public hands? That's something they're examining at the moment. Obviously, I would imagine that won't be an easy task, yeah?
Right. Well, they don't like public scrutiny. They've got a lot to hide.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely, and it's clear the wealth is phenomenal. In 2011, like they sold off or did business dealings of something like 667 million euros in 2011. And one of the new children's hospitals we discovered being built here, they've pumped in 300 million euros into it. They're totally in control of it, totally own it, totally control it. They're going to run it, children's hospital here in Dublin.
We're going backwards instead of forwards.
Yeah. So it's quite clear the influence of the Vatican is quite clear. The state recognises that, and they're examining, can they get all this wealth, all this control in Ireland by the Catholic Church, or in reference to the Catholic Church, can we switch back into public hands? But I suspect that that'll be a task and a half in itself.
Well, you know, it's interesting because obviously church attendance is going way down. I remember Mary telling me that once. You know, nobody is in these big cathedrals anymore on Sunday. And something like... 9 out of 10 of the people who showed up in the 70s to see the Pope didn't show up this time when Bergoglio came to town. So, you know, is it? What's your sense, all of you, of the church? Is their back against the wall? Are they feeling this? Or what's going on in Ireland?
I don't know what they're doing, Kevin. I'll tell you now, at the moment, I haven't seen it myself, and we haven't got any pictures yet, but we will have them for you. They've erected a statue in O'Connell Street. Yeah?
Only today.
And the statue is of a priest with a Freemason symbol on his hand.
You're kidding.
No, seriously, we'd have to get pictures and send them to you.
I was right in town O'Connell yesterday Street. And it hasn't been erected, but it was seen today. So basically overnight it was erected.
Wow, that's very interesting. Now, listen, I wanted to, you know, we've got at least 20 minutes left, and I, you guys are members of the Irish Grand Jury, and I want to talk about that for a while in terms of alternatives and what we can do about all this mess. You know, one thing I remember Vinny mentioning, that the idea is, well, let's open an office in some of these homeless places, convene the grand jury there, convene common law courts, and set them right up in the neighborhoods. What are some of your thoughts, anybody, about any of that?
In regarding the property, see, there was an idea put forward that if one of these slum landlords, if one of their buildings was taken over, that we would actually come to an agreement where we won't give it back unless they're willing to actually give the property up to actually help with to maybe help the homeless direct. Because all the government and all the council seem to say, oh, legislation is legislation, we can't do this, our hands are tied, all this red tape. Well, it's a crisis. More and more people are going homeless every single day, and something has to change. And the only time change happens in Ireland is when the people actually stand up, the grassroots movement stand up and actually make the change. Because our government are in bed with the likes of the church, and they ignore the people's will. At the moment, we have an unelected government who like to think they can do what they want whenever they want. And if we want to challenge that, they put everything in our way to actually stop that. So more and more, it seems like we're living in Nazi Germany now rather than the Republic of Ireland, which is only a republic in name, not in title, other than that, you know.
So it's literally about taking back everything. And that's why the common law grand jury is such a brilliant step now because of that. It's giving people a way they can do it themselves.
Well, that's exactly it. It gives the power back to the people. We already had this power, but years and years of indoctrination through the church has put us all in fear, that we can't question authority, we can't question the church, we can't question authority at all. But the thing is, we have the power to fight back, and the common law is our jurisdiction, and it is something that we can do together, and it can be a global revolution that we put out there. Our common law jurisdictions are the way to fight back. Legally and lawfully.
Right. Well, I know, John, you've done a lot of background too, but the whole history in Ireland, how it got this way, you know, the deal the Edmund de Valera made with the Catholic Church, inserting their rights into the Constitution and that. But is this going to take a huge political revolution? Like, what's going to be needed to break this open, folks? What do you think?
Well, I, on your point there of a revolution, it could very well head that way.
I think it's already started, Kevin, because with the Take Back the City campaign, it started off with seven groups, and now it's gone up to 17 or 18 groups, and they're all migrants, renters' unions, Take Back Trinity, homeless activist groups. So there's a wide divide of groups that's involved in the Take Back. Take Back the City campaign. So it is growing, and there was a march actually down O'Connell Street. They blocked off O'Connell Bridge there yesterday, and there would have been over 1,000 people at that march. And like this is only stemming from July, because this is when the forced occupation took place.
Appropriate, it's right on O'Connell Street near the General Post Office, where the rebellion happened in 1916, headquarters.
Yeah,
I have a question. Is there any you know, fallback or pushback by police officers with those who are occupying, you know, various buildings? And if there is, what does that look like?
During the week, we had Garda that were protecting masked men. Private security that came in to evict the occupants of 25 North Frederick Street, which was one of the buildings that Take Back the City actually took. And we had masked men come in as private security, along with Gardaí, who said they had ski masks on to protect them.
And they used consoles to gain access
to gain access to the building. They also, the Garda also used pepper spray on the people that were actually protecting the building. So there was six people that were arrested. There was five people that were hospitalized. So yes, there is that the Garda are protecting the landlords.
Are there any
Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, it was just in regard to the masked men. They were wearing balaclavas. The last time I think they allowed thugs like that into Dublin was in the 70s when the Irish government were involved with paramilitary groups, which they covered up the Dublin Monaghan bombing.
Yeah.
Now, these balaclava thugs, they didn't have any no license plate on the van they were using. The van wasn't fit to be on the road. Did no tax, insurance, NCT or MOT. And it actually turned out the vehicle was registered as a riot van from Manchester.
And I read also the chief of police used to be connected to some of the terrorist groups in Northern Ireland. Is that right?
Right. He was actually a member of the PSNI. PSNI became then the police force in Northern Ireland. But this gentleman, a family member belonged to himself, was actually murdered in the war up the north. Now he has sworn allegiance to the Queen and to Britain. Now by doing that, he swore allegiance to the Queen, and now within a week we've seen that he's using paramilitaries down south, in the south of Ireland, kicking the peaceful students out of a property that they occupied to highlight the homeless crisis. Mm-hmm. So I think they needed someone in with a strong arm to actually come in and shut all this down. And right. they've hired the best man for the job, it seems.
Unfortunately, right. They've actually done the opposite because they've grown the movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're our best allies, the people who hit us on the head.
Like, we had a homeless march there back in April, and I think if we had about 600, maybe 700 people out on the streets for the homeless in April, that's probably about it. And that included the unions and the whole lot. Like, everybody was on board with this. But, like, the march yesterday had over 1,000 people. So, unfortunately, the Garda have actually backfired on themselves, and they've just grown the Take Back the City movement. So, yeah.
In about time.
Yeah. How are you all feeling about this? I mean, what are your spirits like these days?
Disgusted by it, to be honest, to have these balaclava thugs driving around the city when there's one law for us and one law for the other. I think it's kind of become commonplace. They can just kick families out of their homes in balaclavas and nothing be said. Protected by our government, protected by our police commissioner, former PSNI.
Our army
are just... our police force at the moment has actually purchased 5 million rounds of ammunition. They must be expecting a revolution, but they're basically forcing our hand. I think they actually want a revolution in order to put in with the guise of martial law, maybe.
They're trying to provoke violence like they've done for so long in the north.
Do you guys in Ireland, do you guys have what's called Antifa?
Antifa, there is, they're not so much Antifa. There's a lot of different groups that are in Ireland at the moment. There is a lot of them kind of groups here. I don't like to put people in boxes, but there is people that are counter revolution, you know, that way. The state are now putting, they're basically putting the country in fear. They want people to revolt. But the thing about people in Ireland, we are peaceful. We are peaceful protest. Yeah. No one wants to go back to the years of the Troubles and all that. No one really wants that. But the government want to force that upon the people in order to take more control and more restrictions on the people.
Vinny, that's what I was going to ask, that you believe a lot of their actions are deliberate provocations to create violence to then create a police state.
Well, and that's what exactly Antifa does, right?
Yeah, hold on a minute, Kate.
They want us to look like thugs so that we'll turn decent, honest people away from the campaign.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
even one politician, he never even acknowledged the balaclava thugs, but he had no problem targeting anyone that was wearing a hoodie that day. So they deliberately tried to provocate
that was your
the situation.
Labor, wasn't it?
Mm. Bringing it back to the Common Law Court, everybody, can I just ask a question about that? If you had to convene a case, who would you name right now? What case, considering this whole thing strategically, what would be a good case to bring forward now publicly, do you think?
Personally, I would think our Minister for Justice, Charlie Flanagan, and the Garda Commissioner, and obviously the unelected government that are there at the moment, because they're all involved in this.
Could I round that up and say the state?
The state, yeah.
Yeah.
The state, effectively the state, taking action against the state.
We've also got our Tánaiste who has refused to cap rents. Who's our Tánaiste, Simon Coveney, who's also a landlord. Our Tánaiste would be our second in command in the government.
There's a lot to deal with. It can get overwhelming.
Well, see, they purposely put these laws, these statutes and acts in our way in order to, you know, to stop the people moving forward in court cases. Originally, statutes were there to actually hold the government to account, but at the moment they're using these statutes against the people itself, which is completely unconstitutional. It's against everything our revolutionaries in the past fought against, but it seems that they're pushing forward with their agenda to have everyone under their law, which is not where we are in a common law jurisdiction.
And that's absolutely, and that's clearly breaching the common law, the common law.
Now, you might have seen the news posting today at ICCCS.org of nearly 200 Catholic priests are breaking away. They're saying, we're not going to follow Rome anymore, we're not going to enforce this policy of covering up child trafficking, child killing. Do you see a similar kind of disaffection at anywhere in the state? Are the police, anybody within the system who are challenging it, you know, who are saying don't like what's happening?
Nah, people in Ireland, Kevin, a lot of people in Ireland religion is actually still being forced on them today, and it's in 2018, especially little children. If you refuse for communion and confirmation in Ireland for little children, they get Section 47 through statutes and acts through the courts to force children into making these communions and confirmations and different things. So I think the Catholic Church is still pretty much forcing people into doing these things in Ireland still.
Are you saying, Trish, are you saying that the law actually forces people to church? And take communion and all that?
Yeah, I can say that because it has happened in my case. I refused to have my kids have anything got to do with the Catholic Church, and I wanted to deregister them. And I was brought to court, and a Section 47 was granted through the district court, and my kids had no other option but to make their communion and confirmation because they were forced into it.
What's the Section 47?
Section 47 is where the judge overrides what the parent's decision is, and the judge gives consent rather than the parent giving it. So the judge is actually acting as a guardian of your child.
Or takes away consent. Or circumvents consent.
Yeah.
Now, John, is that, of course, it's legal because they do it. They make it legal in their own book, but I mean...
Well, they argue it's legal.
Not under the Constitution, but under their statute law.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can I just bring up something to your attention as well, Kevin?
Yep.
Hitler never broke the law. He changed the laws around him. So we can see where this is going. You know, it's going all over Europe. You know, they're just changing, making up laws as they go.
Yeah.
And if you want to challenge that, should they lock you up in the prison or whatever, you know?
Can I verify Vinny's point there, Kevin?
Yep.
Research has indicates that the state, the government at this present time, are generating approximately 500 statute laws per year since the financial crash of 2008. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's just ruled by fiat.
They have one agenda to shut down our nation, the people of our nation, and the ability to live their lives as best as possible.
We're not a sovereign state anymore. We're a controlled state.
We're a controlled state. Very well put.
Kevin, it's a new world order directive.
Right. That's the bigger agenda, of course.
Yeah.
force everybody into that. You guys are cutting edge. I mean, maybe they're doing to you what they do on Indian reservations in Canada. You know, people who've been targeted for genocide traditionally, they figure they can do it to them easiest first. But they made a mistake.
It's exactly, yeah. And you know what the common denominator seems to be? Hitler and the likes of that was actually backed by the Pope and the Vatican in 1939. Yep. And that's becoming... all these governments seem to be backed by the Vatican in some way, shape, or form. And being the Vatican being one of the biggest producers of weapons as well, they have their own armory, and they do produce a lot of weapons themselves.
Yep. Beretta so Limited, 100% owned by the Vatican Bank.
Exactly.
Yes, and again, De Valera went to the Vatican to get approval of our constitution.
Yeah.
After he argued in front of everybody here that this constitution was for the people of Ireland, the sovereign people of Ireland, yet he ran to the Vatican for approval of it. Mm. Quite extraordinary. Mm.
Is that public knowledge? Like, is that taught in the history books that happened?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, yeah, it is known. I have a book. The author's name's don't come across my mind at this time, but I have a book on the Irish Constitution that verifies that he took these steps in constructing the Irish Constitution of 1937 here, that when it was achieved, he went to the Vatican for approval of it, as much as he went to the American government and he went to Germany. He actually went to Hitler as well for his opinion on it, apparently.
Right. I mean, I can't get my mind around how a pope would give approval for anything. Where's his authority? What does that have to do with Ireland, you know, the people?
Anyway,
this is
protected under
canon law.
They argue canon law is precedent here in Ireland. Yeah.
Well, that's like a corporation saying our statutes are more powerful than your natural born rights. That's exactly what that is.
Absolutely, and I looked at some video evidence during the week on that point that they argued that the gentleman that was talking about common law a little bit on a video presentation, he verified that the Uniform Commercial Code is the king of all statutes where commercial interests and corporate interests prevail, or it's argued they prevail. Yeah. Yeah. He explained that Universal Commercial Code is worldwide. Yeah, or the Uniform Commercial Code is worldwide, should I say. And as a result, they simply ignore our inalienable rights and common law jurisdiction. Absolutely.
Folks, we got about 5 minutes left. Anything urgent you haven't said yet, or which kind of pointing the way forward a bit in terms of this whole struggle?
Well, that the people of Ireland have had enough with our government taking control and taking all our inalienable and indivisible rights off us. We're not having it anymore, and the students have proved that from Take Back the City, that the younger generation have had enough too. And we're going to be 100% behind them and help them in every way, shape and form to actually keep this movement going. And hopefully it spreads to Europe and the world, that we need to take our war back.
Right.
Because it's been taken over too long now, and we need to stand up and fight back.
And I can pick up on Vinny's point there. I can verify through research again this week. It's very much a prominent issue over in England as well. What we're experiencing here, it's happening in England as well. And obviously it's clear it's happening in European countries also. So it is a global issue.
For our listeners, too, there is a common law network directly connected to the ITCCS forming out of London. Any English listeners, you can contact us. We'll put you in touch with them, thecommonland@gmail.com. Anybody else want to say some final words?
Yeah, Kevin, just to let you know that, let your listeners know. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Just to let your listeners know, there's so many children in this country now. I'm talking about teenagers suffering depression. And they're literally closing down all the services to help them. And it's like, it's on a mass scale, the amount of children that are suffering from 14, 13 years of age up to 18, 19, 20 and beyond.
Yes.
Like, it's really having a serious effect on the young children.
Right. Thanks, Mary.
Can I also say something, Kevin? This movement has grown so much that the homeless families themselves are actually going in and taking houses as well. Like, they've actually gotten to the stage now where they're sick of having no services. They go and declare themselves homeless. There's nowhere to put them. There's all these boarded houses up all over the place. Like, as Vincent said earlier on, there's over 300,000 vacant properties around this city, around this country. And these homeless people are actually going in and taking these properties themselves. And rightly so. Rightly so. And I encourage anybody out there that's homeless, if there's a vacant home there and it's boarded up, go in and take it.
Right.
Take your home, because you're not going to be given it. This government is not going to give you a house. So go and take it.
Yeah.
And get what you can out of them.
Perfect. That's a great note to end on. I want to thank you all. Jean, brilliant words. All of you, Vinny and Mary, John, Trish. Always good to have you. We're going to be talking again real soon about carrying this on, having you back soon. Keep us updated. Thank you all for calling.
Okay, take care.
Thanks, Gavin.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Our brothers and sisters with the Common Law Network in Dublin calling in the homeland where my family, part of us, came from. Kate, in the last few minutes, I did want to flag something. There was a thing that came in just a few hours ago I forgot to mention. Some of the content of that secret archive that the dissident priests have released to ICCCS, you know, it makes reference to a series of Vatican prisons around the world where people are held, where organs are trafficked, where people are used experimentally. This is a whole different aspect. You know, it's kind of what Vinny was talking about with the private armies in the Vatican. Their private prison system, people are dying within it. And this is horrible stuff. But it's one of the things I wanted to flag. People were wondering, well, what's in those archives?
What's in it, yeah.
Yeah, and this is the level of depravity and genocide we're talking about when you're talking about the Church of Rome. So,
oh my God,
we're going to be going more into that next week and probably the weeks after. Any final words before we go off the air?
Keep the good fight. It's always, just, you know, you're in my thoughts and prayers, along with. Many, many natives throughout Canada we're watching and we're waking up globally.
Yes, we are. And for native folks in Canada who are listening, it's an indispensable resource for you to get your hands on this book. Now, if you can't afford it, just go to murderbydecree.com. It's got all the hard evidence you need of how your families got destroyed by the genocide in the so-called residential schools. Amazon.com, Murder by Decree, The Crime of Genocide in Canada. We actually give complimentary copies to residential school survivors, teachers, educators in the native world. Please write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll get that in the hands of the next generation especially, who need to know what happened to their people. And a final note, announcements. Not only is the Cornwall gathering tomorrow of the Catholic bishops going on, that's at the NAV Center, 1950 Montreal Road in Cornwall. Please go there with your picket signs. Go there and create a fuss. There's going to be people heading there. If you want to get part of that protest, call us, thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll put you in touch with the local organizers. Also, a convicted Ninth Circle Cardinal, Gerald Lacroix, he's the Cardinal from Canada. He's going to be convening a conference for Catholic youth in Rome between October 3rd and 28th. We know for a fact that approaching Samhain, October 31st, that's a high point in the satanic calendar. And the San Lorenzo Church, the Jesuit Church in Rome, we know that's one of the places these sacrifices occurred. So these are going to be items in upcoming shows. Follow our work, itccs.org. Read that communique today, and there's the stand-down order to the bishops there. You can run off and educate yourself and then take action. That's the whole purpose of this show. Write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, and keep those suggestions coming about programs. We are always needing your involvement. Don't be a passive listener. Plan a show. Interview people. Get the evidence out there. That's how we've gotten this far after 25 years. come on the show.
Come
good
on
point,
the show.
Kate. Yes. Well, I mean, how did you, just in 1 minute remaining, tell us how you found out about all this stuff?
It was part of my awakening process. I started looking into my own genealogy, and that just opened a treasure trove of you know, just historical events that I didn't know about, and I always say my spirit guides led me to ITCCS and your stuff, Kevin. It wasn't an accident at all.
No, things never are.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate you being on again, and please come back again soon.
Thank you.
And thank you for the message from your people. It means a lot to me personally and to all of us at ITCCS. A final message to people about the Cornwall Child Trafficking Network. There's a woman called Sylvia in Cornwall who spent the last 20 years documenting in detail the crime of child murder and trafficking there and the cover-up by the Catholic Church and the government of Ontario. It's at a website called theinquiry.ca. That's The Inquiry with an I, theinquiry.ca. Read it there. The hard evidence is all there. And so please tune in next week again. For Here We Stand, I'm your host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear.